Welcome to the Immigrant Stories Program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher. In the late 1800s, Italy was plagued with overcrowding and an unstable government. It was during this time that many Italian families decided that they'd had enough and they fled to the United States in search of a better life. Ernie Gerbaz is a descendant of two of the many Italian families who came to the Roaring Fork Valley from the Aosta Valley in northern Italy. Ernie's dad's family, the Gerbazes, settled near Woody Creek around 1892. Ernie's mom was an Albany. Her family left the Aosta Valley in 1891 and settled in what we now know as Old Snowmass. 1891 was the same year that an angry mob in New Orleans lynched 11 Italians for a crime they didn't commit. The Gerbazes and the Albanys had fled an unstable country for a hostile one. We started our interview by talking about those early days in the Upper Valley.
So the Albanys and the Gerbazes came from the same general area.
Yes, they did.
And the Albanys that are now in the Lower Valley first started in with this family in the Upper Valley.
That's right.
The Gerbazes and the Albanys settled in that Upper Valley. There wasn't much up there at that time, was there, in the Upper Valley?
No, there wasn't. Starting in those years, it was just the starting of a lot of the settlement there. And, of course, many times they had to supplement their income from other means. And Grandfather Albany, he worked in the mines in Aspen. He also worked for the railroad and always seemed to have some additional jobs in order to gain additional capital to buy more land, buy more equipment, which is horses in those days.
So he would work for the railroad or for in the mines, and who would work the land? Would he then...
During the times that, of course, like in the winter time, was able to get the some of the older children and also his wife Clementine, in order to feed the cattle, milk the cows, and the other labor while he worked.
So everybody worked.
Oh yes,
the whole family.
It was a land of work.
So you are third generation. Your great-grandfather.
We'd be third.
Third.
Yes.
Tell me about your mom and dad.
My mother married at 20 years of age, and my father was 27, and they were the ones who homesteaded that parcel of land.
Is that exactly?
If you look at it, the Aspen Gerbaz Trailer Court that you see up there, well, it's just right to the south of that is where they homesteaded. And we still had some pictures of the house, and we had a painting here of it, of the house where it stood. And then he passed away, when my father did, when I was 10 months old. And so at that time, my mother was left with four boys, and so therefore moved to her parents, which was Alex and Clementine Albany, that were now down at Carbondale. And we stayed there on the place, on the Albany place, till I was 7 years old. Then my mother remarried in 1935 Fred Montevere, and he was another Italian that emigrated over here, and he actually came over here with his parents when he was 3 years old. His trade was a cowboy, and as a matter of fact, he stayed at the foot of Mount Sopris on what they called the Bain Place, which Tom Turnbull had owned. And he was left there by his father in the winter to feed the hay out to the cattle when he was 13 years of age. And he stayed up there all winter. And when he needed groceries, he had to go clear down to the Emma store, which was quite a number of miles away from there. And then after that, he left home at an early age and started riding on the North Thompson Cattle Association permit with Ernest Baca. And then after a few years, he took over the riding of the North Thompson Cattle Association. Then he went over to, after he got married, then we went over to Redstone, and we lived in a cow camp up Coal Basin and stayed there during the summers, and then in the winter would go back down to the Arbony place.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. And my interview today is with Ernie Jerboz. Ernie's mom married Fred Montivore after his dad died. They eventually moved from the Arbony Ranch where they were living to their own 640-acre ranch behind the coke ovens across from Redstone.
And again, in order to supplement at that time difficult to make a full living on here, he had to go back to riding again and would ride over at North Thompson, which was miles away from where we were. And I always remember my mother, she ran the place there at Redstone with us boys helping, and there was three brothers at that time because one brother had passed away. And so we put up the hay, we did all of the other necessary of irrigating. My mother did most of this.
How old were you boys at that time?
I was in the second grade when we went up there, which was in 1938. There was times that my mother would like to go see my dad over at North Thompson. And I remember a couple occasions she and I would start out early in the morning, ride up Coal Basin over the top of what they call Bradreach, and that was just trails, down into South Thompson, back up over the top of South Fork of Middle Thompson, and then clear over the top down into the grandfather and grandmother's place. And then she would leave me there, and she would ride on over to the cow camp on North Thompson.
That's a ways.
Yeah. It was hardship is what it was.
Tell me more about that. It seems like there was an emotional part of that for you.
Oh, there is, because the hardship that my mother went through.
She had to be the father and mother when your
father was absent. Yes.
What was a typical day for her?
Typical day for her was get up in the morning early, go out to irrigate, and then in turn we had to milk the cows. Then she had to separate, and then we
separate the milk and the cream. Right?
Yes, and then we had a another parcel of land which was clear over across called the Mesa, that she would have to go over there and also irrigate it too.
What do you remember about her? What are the important things that she taught you?
One thing she taught us was how to work hard. She taught us to be a family is what she taught us. And in turn, this is something important that carried out through life was the importance of family. But sometimes the separation between work and being able to be with family a lot of times did not happen to me.
Tell me about that.
I started off at the bank down here in 1950 and started off earning $95 a month.
How'd you get that job? How did that
Pretty difficult. I did live at home at that time, which was up at Carbondale. And so when living there, didn't have to pay rent. My mother sometime was still riding, but in the summertime, but she was down there some of the times in order to cook for us. Otherwise, we just batched is what we did. And so then in 1951, I married my wife, Marjorie. And so therefore, I had someone to start to cook for me again. And
that wasn't the only reason you married
No, her. I did not. No. She was the salvation of my life.
Well, tell me about her.
Over the years and later years hereafter, retired, I had a large amount of sickness. And I credit her and the doctors and the Lord for being able to live today. She attended to me as a nurse in the hospital and also here at home.
That loving bond.
Oh, I should say it was.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program, and my guest today is Ernie Jerboz. Ernie married Marjorie Buckowich in 1950, shortly after he started at the First National Bank in Glenwood Springs.
And then at the bank, when we got married, I was making $100 a month.
How old were you then?
We got married at 20. I did. She was 19. Which today, if you look at children, you say it's too young to get married. But
life was shorter then.
Oh, yeah. And so then I worked at the bank earning that $100 a month, and she earned $85 a month at JCPenney's. And we then rented a place for 18 months at $45 a month. So if you equate it out to what we were earning, what we were paying for rent, it didn't quite add up to a full living. But at the end of 18 months, we decided we were going to buy a home. We bought the house, which was directly across the street here. We paid it off in 7 years, and it wasn't from my job at the bank or her job at JCPenney. It was from me having 2 to 3 to 4 jobs along with the bank job. I was the janitor at the bank for I think it was around 9 years until... Finally, I was going to be the head of the installment loan department, and at that time it was George McKinley said, you got to find somebody in order to do that janitor work. You can't do both. So I had to figure out, and they didn't figure out who to get. So that one day we drove up and down the streets trying to think of somebody who we could get in order to take over my job as the janitor. So as we drove up the street, we drove by the house of Harry Gardner and thought, by gosh, hey, maybe Harry Gardner. So I called Harry Gardner, and he was interested in doing that. So Harry came down, and he started as the custodian of the bank and other properties that they had. And he stayed there as the custodian and many more jobs than custodian until 1990 when I retired. And I told him that he could stay on there, and he said, no. He says, I'm through when you're through. And Harry left, and so did I. And I spent 40 years there at the bank. Finally did get a little bit more salary as time went on, and finally retired out of there as president and chairman of the board.
I'd say that's quite an accomplishment.
That's
called working your way up.
That's the hard way to work your way up. And especially with the jobs that I had, I would work for the painter, Ski Lichnowsky Painting, who used to own where this house is today. And then in turn, I worked for Fred Robertson doing floor sanding and coating. I worked counting cars down at the drive-up and the show down here. And counting people at the show.
The drive-in movie?
Yes. And then also did reporting for a reporting agency for insurances. And one of the classic jobs was I was a constable in the Justice of the Peace court system.
What did that involve?
That involved...
Constable?
Going out to do as a process server.
Mm.
And I found out the hard way that that became a very trying and difficult job.
Tell me a story about one instance.
Well, I always remember the time that I went to serve a gentleman up there by the close to the Catholic Church, and had a very nice wife. But I'd served him about 2 to 3 times before, and I go up there this time, and he was drunk. So he proceeded to give me a few not too good of words. And the next thing is there was rocks out in the rock garden. He started to rock me. And so I headed behind the closest tree, and he still continued to rock me. I got over by the Christian Science Church, and he was there still at it. And so finally I gave up and left, and the next morning I went down, who was at that time Bob Delaney, was the district attorney, and I went down to him and I told him I was going to quit, that I had had enough, that man was rocking me. And he said, oh, don't worry. He said, I used to do that when I was going to college. He said, what you do is just pick up a big flashlight. And then in turn, when they do that, he said, just use the flashlight. He said, that way they're not going to throw rocks at you.
Use the other end of the flashlight.
Yes. And then at the bank for years, I also was the repossessor.
Another fun and friendly job, huh?
Oh, yes, it was. That was a way to be resourceful in the way in which you did it.
So tell me about that. What was the resourceful part?
Many times that my wife was the co-repossessor. And she went with me many, many times.
So she was she the getaway driver?
That's right. She drove our car away as I drove the other car.
I see. Or in the case of people with shotguns.
Then in turn, she threw it in reverse very quickly when I got in. But you hear stories of this today, of people being shot for doing this very same thing.
There was a guy murdered a month ago in Denver.
And looking back, I was able to most times negotiate in order to get it. If it was in a secured area or in some other area that you were unable to access. Otherwise, at that time, it was called self-help repossession.
Huh.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Ernie Jerboz. Ernie is the grandson of Northern Italian immigrants from the Aosta Valley. He grew up in Coal Basin near Redstone, Colorado, and went to work for the First National Bank in 1950 as the janitor, and retired in 1990 as the chairman of the board and the CEO.
Talk to me about growing up Italian in this valley. What do you remember?
Our grandparents, they spoke their dialect only in the homes. I never heard of them speaking it out in the public like down here on the streets of Glenwood or Carbondale, unless maybe they were speaking to one of their own, but that was mostly reserved for the home itself. Our parents never taught us the dialect that they spoke. And they wanted us to learn English.
Talk about the impact of Italians in this valley.
They worked very hard. They worked not relying upon other people other than maybe their own to help them at their place. They go and help the other person at their place. And these people worked very hard. They were frugal. And many times in these later years, they became the bankers for so many of the other population in the valley, and many times for other Italians. Matter of fact, my mother and dad borrowed for the place at Redstone an Italian here in Glenwood. Then in turn, in later years, we did not borrow from banks. Even though I was a banker, we borrowed from the Italians. And we always knew somebody up the country who was the Italian banker. Because we had a CD coming due, we only borrowed one time from a bank in all of our life, which is not too good of a story to say that you were a banker.
So why do you think the Italians were so successful and were able to accumulate wealth?
They were successful for the reason that they worked hard. They knew methods of growing crops that they had heard of in the old country. One thing here in the valley was potatoes. We find one aunt and uncle who lived in Aspen that they took and grew potatoes 1 year, and they paid off the ranch in 1 year. And it isn't only them. It was many others that did the very same thing, that they happened to choose the right crop. And in turn, even though many times potatoes were in later years very difficult to sell at a very low price, they were still able to find other methods of growing crops that made them money. And in turn, they didn't have the playthings that you see of today. They didn't have the, we're going to say today, the four-wheelers, the boats. They did not have that. But they still had a good life. I always remember on Sundays, usually, depending on the crops of what had to be done, Sundays were the day of visit. And we many times would get into the car when we lived at Redstone. We would go visit somebody, or somebody always came up there to visit us. And it was usually set aside for Sundays.
So what kind of food would we have on Sundays when people came to visit?
Most times what it was fried chicken. And I always remember Mother raised her own chickens. We had fried chickens and potatoes, which we grew, and then vegetables, which she grew in the garden. And one of the main things that I always remember was the ice cream. She would churn ice cream whenever visitors came up there.
That was Ernie Jerboss, former president and chairman of the board of Glenwood's First National Bank. And on a personal note, I grew up in Glenwood Springs, and many of the people who helped raise me were Italians like Ernie Jerboss. Like Ernie, they were kind, hardworking people who succeeded because they helped and supported one another. They transcended the prejudice and discrimination that confronted them and reached beyond that to help others. When my mom and dad couldn't qualify for a business loan at the First National Bank to open what is now the 19th Street Diner, it was Ernie who helped them find an Italian banker in the Upper Valley. So here's to the Italians, the Jerbozzes, Arbenis, Gambas, Predis, Pilates, Durettes, Tonsos, Toniolis, Boscos, Blancos, Zanellas, Granges, Demos, Cerises, Gabassis, Guadagnolas, Rosas, and Fedrizis, and a host of others I have missed. You came to the United States looking for a better life, and you made us all richer in the process.